Well, everybody, welcome back to Braving the Journey. I'm your host, Zach Mathers. Hey, if you haven't heard yet, I'm excited to let you guys know my 30-day sober challenge. I've been working really hard at getting this program together. That's just a program I want to be able to offer to you guys as a way to walk through that first 30 days. And even if you're sober and you just want to dig deeper into your recovery, it is close, you guys. It is close to getting done. I am not putting a date to you right now, but I'm just letting you know I am close and I am excited. Keep an eye out for when the launch comes for that. It'll be coming hopefully very, very soon. But right now, in this moment, I am super excited for you guys because I have Tyler Menthini. Now, Tyler is one of the co-founders of YANA. And what YANA is, it stands for You Are Not Alone. But what it does is it's a platform that people that are in recovery or choosing or wanting to step out of their addiction or their struggle can go to. And it's a platform where you can find community, find support. There's an AA meeting that exists 24 hours a day on it. It's just a beautiful way to connect to others. And I honestly am so excited. Tyler is somebody I believe that is just kind of helping shake up the world of what recovery looks like. Not only that, but honestly, Tyler is one of those guys that he knows Alcoholics Big Book inside and out. And he does just a beautiful job sharing and talking about it with us. So I'm excited for you guys to hear this. If you are someone that's in the spot of trying to figure out, man, what does my recovery look like? Or how do I get sober? Or where do I fit in this? I don't like AA, or I do like AA, but I don't like this. And you're just like so many of us just trying to figure out what is it? What does your path look like? This podcast episode is for you. It helps you see going, look at the options, look at the different ways, look at the different things. And so I'm going to stop talking and we're going to just dive into this conversation. So here we go, you guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Braving the Journey. I have Tyler Menthini on with me, and I'm excited because Tyler is one of the co-founders of YANA Company, which he'll explain more and more into depth and detail about what that is. But it is something that I'm honestly super excited for you guys to learn about because I think it's a recovery tool that is out there that is phenomenal. So, Tyler, man, I just want to say welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Zach. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, and I know life is hectic and busy and all of that, and we made it happen. So to me, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's I appreciate your flexibility.
No, I get it, though, because I'm one of those people where I'm just like, sometimes you're running a million miles an hour, and I personally find myself always coming back to this, like, how do I slow down? Because for some reason in our culture, it's like a badge of honor to say we're really busy, and I'm trying to like reverse that in my life and be like, how do we not be so busy and like create margin? But it's crazy how life just it easily lets you get consumed with, you know, just so much to do. So,
yeah, I think one of the hardest things for me to learn, especially in early recovery, was just how to say no. Yes. Know your like how much bandwidth you have. I have a 6-month-old baby. Unfortunately, our house flooded. So we had to move very suddenly to a new house. It was like the one snowstorm in like Texas history where we're like all of a sudden there's 9 inches of snow and we're totally unequipped to handle that kind of climate. And so, it's been crazy, but I think like, that's one of the reasons that I'm so grateful to be in a program of recovery. Cause as you know, just as the book says, it allows me to match calamity with serenity.
I like that. Hey, before we jump in, let's take a moment actually. Cause I'll share one, you share one, you get to go first, a gratitude. What is something that you are grateful for in this moment right now?
So I have 3 boys, all who are very, very different from one another, but I'm incredibly grateful that they've got to see me grow up and that they've got to grow up watching me be in recovery. My oldest son, he definitely remembers my drinking days. He's 12. But you know, anytime he's ever asked about me, you know, the thing he leads with is, you know, my dad is sober. He started this company called YANA, and that's like a pretty awesome feeling as a dad. And, you know, and that I've got to show them like what it really means to live a life in recovery, you know, to have a touch sort of all those facets of your life. So I'm really grateful for them.
I like that. I had a friend once tell me that our ceiling that we create in this life is the floor in which our kids propel from. And I've always looked at that going, like, you know, like wherever I end off at in life, that is the platform that my kids get to go from, you know? And so everything that we do, I think I have a tendency to kind of filter it through that, going, is this going to position my kids, you know? So I like it. Yeah. So for me, gratitude, I want to piggyback on your, I have a 12-year-old son also. He's my oldest. And, and he's the same, him and I, we do these, once a week we get out in the water, just him and I, and go surf early morning dawn patrol session. And, more so than the surfing, it's the time to talk to him, you know, and it's him and I open talk conversation. He knows my whole story. He knows everything. And, we have great talks about it, you know? And so I think I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful. My wife and I do foster care, and we just got a new placement, foster daughter, 13-year-old girl 2 nights ago. And,
congrats.
I'm grateful for my three kids. I have three of my own, being so flexible, because literally it's like, we get a phone call, we're like, hey, we're going to have a new kid show up later. And we're like adjusting bedrooms and bed setups, and they just go with it. And so honestly, I'm grateful. I'm just grateful for my family's dynamic and their ability to love. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
All right, man. So I want to hear your story. I kind of want to hear how all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden probably, but how you went from where you were to now running Yana.
Yeah. So I feel like I was addicted from a very, very young age. I come from a long line of alcoholics. Everyone in my immediate family is sober. My mom's been sober almost 30 years. You know, my older brother's been sober 10. My younger brother's been sober 5. And so the genetic predisposition to addiction is super prevalent in my family. So I went to my first AA meeting when I was 17.
Okay.
I think that, my mom could sort of see the writing on the wall that there was. And the fact is that, like, from the day I picked up a drink, I just drank differently than a lot of my peers did. And I think the issue is that when you're 17, you're going to start to recognize a lot of the symptoms before you accept the reality. And by the time I accepted the reality, I was 37. So 20 years drinking and drugging, and saw a lot of really, really bad stuff in between. But for me, like, a big part, so my first AA meeting, I walked into this dimly lit church in Bath, Maine, which is a small little shipping town nobody's ever heard of. And it was like a bunch of guys, you know, older, you know, probably like late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, very spooky. They were like, do you have a problem with alcohol? And I was like, I have no idea. They fleeced me out of a dollar, and I was, and it kept me out of the rooms of AA, because the stories they told, there was no big books anywhere in sight. And the stories that they told were like about, you know, getting their ninth DUI. I was 17. I didn't even have a driver's license at that time. They talked about getting in physical altercations with their wives, and I was a million miles away from marriage. And so that piece of identification just wasn't there. And I said, I can't be one of you. And so I didn't show back up to an AA meeting until I was 22. And that was actually the first time that I ended up in treatment. My story is that I'm a chronic relapser. Okay. Every time I had got sober, it was on the tail end of an ass whipping, where fear was, and my experience is that fear will keep me sober for about 18 months. I have an 18 month shelf life where fear, and then after that, it's like that little voice. It's like, you could probably smoke a joint. I mean, that's going to be, it's natural. It's not addictive. When my brain is just totally wired differently.
Yeah.
And so for me, sort of that changing moment was, I didn't even recognize that I had a drinking problem. It was my wife. I knew, like, I had been sober for periods of time before, but that was sort of like those pump the brake moments. And
kind of like get life under control a little bit. And you're like, all right, it's back in control. Now I can go back at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, my story is that, like, I never really drank. People, you know, often said, oh, when I was really depressed, that was like a trigger for me. And that was, like, not my experience. When, like, my life was the shittiest is when I, you know, pulled myself up and, like, got the wife, got the kids back, got the, you know, house and all that stuff sorted out. I usually started drinking when things were going great. And I think the big book talks about, you know, building up this bright future for yourself and then pulling it down on top of your head with a, you know, senseless series of sprees. And that was my experience. And this last time, I had woken up, my wife and I had a date planned for that night. And she said, please don't drink. Just, you know, I don't care like what you do when we get home. Just, you know, if you could be sober for that date, I'd appreciate it. And so I said, okay, you know, and I could be sober for one day. About halfway through that movie, I had a seizure as a result of going through detox. And it was like nothing I had ever felt before. You know, she said, well, you know what it's, and it felt like I had been hit by lightning.
Yeah.
Is the only way to describe that. And so that night I ended up, in detox, at a small hospital, which thank God was staffed by, one of few clinically, you know, one of few, primary care physicians in the city of Austin that specializes in addiction. And he said, no, you know, that was, you know, DTs, like that was a direct result of you not having alcohol in your body. And then for the first time in my life, someone being honest with me, where he just said, look, I can't mince words with you, but you're dying from alcoholism. You know, this is what end-stage alcoholism looks like. Your liver enzyme count is like unbelievably abnormal for someone your age. And so I don't want to say, you know, hey, if you keep doing this, you're going to die. I'm saying that your body is already starting to decay as a result of your alcoholism.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was the fear part. But what really changed it for me was, you know, I ended up finding a sponsor, a guy that had, so the treatment center that I went to had an outpatient component, that I was also in, and he had no affiliation with that hospital. And he was a fill-in for a fill-in as a speaker one night.
Okay.
And when he got up there, you know, he just told my story, you know, there's like so much identification. So I said, hey, I don't know if you're open to sponsoring, but, you know, that's what I really need right now. And he said, sure. Here's the way I do it. I'm going to take you through the work, the first 164. I'm not going to ask you to do anything that's not outlined in the book. But everything that the book asks you to do, you will do. If it asks you to pray, you will pray. If it asks you to sit down and ponder, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to write down a list of people, you know, and so he sort of outlined it, in a way that was like, okay. Because the thing is that I had this sort of natural aversion to AA because I said, I tried AA. It doesn't work. And he said, well, did you open up at the title page of this book? Did you read to 164? And did you do everything that it asked you to do in between? And the answer was, of course, no. In fact, most of the guys that I work with today that say, hey, you know, it doesn't work. I tried this 12 steps up. I ask them the same question. And if they're really being honest, they're like, yeah, no, I kind of like until, you know, the probation officer, or the judge, or the wife, or you know, any number of people were off my ass, and then I sort of just let it slip by the wayside. And so for me, like you know, coming out of this experience, there was a couple of things that I came to believe as being really sort of paramount to long-term recovery. And one is belief in access to a power greater than yourself. You know, I think that there's a lot of people out there that believe in God, and I think that there's fewer that have an access to God. And the steps gave me an access to God that, you know, I rely on. I'm not a, you know, hugely religious person. Like I was raised in the church, but nobody really told us why we were there. And they were sort of like, I don't know, my parents made me go, so now I'm making you go.
Right.
And so to me, there were really different things. And then the next piece, and I think that this is so critical, is working with others. And I think that this can take innumerable forms. But I don't know anybody who is happy in their recovery that isn't giving something of themselves to someone else.
Question on that. Yeah, I want to ask you. I want to ask you on this. So like, because I think that is such a point too, like working with others. When you say that, does that mean inside the realm of sobriety and recovery to you? Or does that mean just like being a service to humankind in general, like just like, you know, I'm just curious. I want to hear, cause I know there's a debate that kind of goes about this. So.
Yeah. So I personally think it's the latter. I choose to give of myself in AA. I love working with guys. I love taking them through the steps. But my mom is 30 years sober and the bulk of her service work is in the form of volunteering at the Boys and Girls Club. You know, my older brother, he's 12 years sober and a lot of what he focuses on is working with low income families in his community, that he helps get back on their feet. And my younger brother, you know, he's almost 6 years sober. He's a professional golfer. And so when he's not playing golf, you know, for a living, he's working with the First Tee program. And so I think that the point is that when we stop focusing on ourselves and what our wants and our needs and our desires are, I have found a direct correlation that the more that I focus on others, then the more likely it is that these other things are going to come into play. And the best way that I heard describe it was a speaker said, you know, the world is, you know, the universe is really in equilibrium. And the more you take, the more you have to give. And the more you give, you get to take. And as long as you keep those scales relatively balanced, you're probably going to feel pretty spiritually healthy.
I like that. No, and I agree with you. For me, like when I first step into the rooms of AA and everyone's like, you got to be a service. And I wasn't being a service in the rooms. I felt this like almost like guilt trip from them. Like, you're not, hey, you're not making the coffee. And I'm like, well, yeah, but we're running a nonprofit working with foster children. Like, you know, like, so my energy is somewhere and it's pouring out, right. But like, and I had to come to terms with that personally, where I was like, it's okay that the rooms of AA wasn't my space, but you know, for me, working with people in recovery through Braving the Journey has been a part of what I get to do, you know, but there's other realms of service. But I like how you balance it. Like, it is, it's like, you have to create space to fill up and to fill up to the point where you have enough to overflow, but you gotta pour it out. So.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I've taken away from Yana on a personal level is that, you know, I make no bones about it. I'm so unapologetically pro AA in the 12 step because that's what worked for me. That literally saved my life. But the more that I've been able to connect with people from all over the world, I mean, and we have members on, you know, four different continents and, you know, it's like 22 countries, 300 cities. And, is that there are so many different modalities in which people get and stay sober. Yeah. And so I have to sort of back up a little bit from, you know, sort of the bylaws, if you will, of what we wanted our community to be about. And I said, okay, obviously AA can't have a stranglehold on God and the way he gets people sober. So what if we just said, hey, if you're going to introduce something new, then you better make sure you know how to teach it to someone else because someone is going to ask you, you know, what is this about? How do you do that? Mm-hmm. And so I learned that there's a lot of different modalities of recovery, and all can be equally as effective. And, you know, it just really, for me, it came down to those two points, you know, belief and access to a higher power and working with others. And however you get there, it doesn't seem to matter as much as that being the end result.
Yeah. And I think there's a piece to it that, cause I know a lot of people that are like, I've tried it all. I went to outpatient. I went to an inpatient program. I tried this detox thing. I did this. I tried AA. But for me, I have to come back to the question of like, did you really give it your all? Like, did you really like, did you sit on the outside of rooms, you know, at AA and like come, you know, show up a little late, leave a little early, or did you actually engage? Because like, there's so many modalities to sobriety and a life of recovery. If you're at a space where you want it, you know, if you're at a space where you're like, sure. I'm actually going to go, you know, cause otherwise it's just a cop out, you know, we just kind of like, it didn't work for me. I'm like, well, you know.
Yeah. And so every program is a program of action. I have yet to come into anyone that says, hey, look, I knew that I was an alcoholic. I knew I was a drug addict. And so I sat on my ass and got sober. Like it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
And a lot of that. And so here's the deal. I nearly died finding a path to recovery. Now, I had great insurance. I had access to great treatment centers. I had some pretty good, you know, sponsors over that period of time. And so really, how did that happen? And I came down to two inescapable conclusions. Number one, piss poor sponsorship. People, you know, the most vocal majority of people in 12-step programs today are people that don't need to be there to begin with. You know, the treatment center industry has really sort of predicated this idea that you're an alcoholic if you say you're an alcoholic. Well, that's just not true because we wouldn't have a DSM that would, you know, have specific diagnostic criteria for alcohol use disorder and substance use disorder to help diagnose those things. And so you hear a lot of things like, hey, when you're ready, you'll just put the plug in the jug or, you know, Sarah's had, you know, three DUIs. I can't believe she's still drinking, or he just lost his kids. You know, what is he doing picking up that bottle? Well, I had no choice in the matter. You know, I had lost the power of choice and drink. But it took me so long to actually believe that, to really understand that I was in the grips of a progressive fatal illness that over any given period of time, I would get worse, not better. But once that thinking became operative, I had no choice. I could either, you know, pick up what I had learned along the way and really make an effort, really dive into it. Or I could die. You know, and those were really the choices that I saw.
Yeah.
And, you know, I looked at my kids, I looked at, you know, my career, I looked at, you know, what I was trying to, you know, accomplish in life and how far away I had fallen from those things. And I said, you know, and I remember telling myself, I was having this internal argument. I was like, I don't think this 12 steps is going to work. But I'm going to work with this sponsor, this guy that, you know, I can relate and identify with. I'm going to do everything that he tells me to do. And if it doesn't work, at least I'll know I gave it my all. And I can try a different path. You know, and really when I took that position and I started doing what the book had asked me to do, I started to recover. And I think that, you know, there's a huge difference. We have a lot of, you know, meetings where you say, I'm a recovering this. Well, in the big book, that the word recovering occurs one time and it's in the family afterward. You know, we're going to be recovering with the people that are in our lives. In every other instance, it says we have recovered. You know, what does that mean? People say, well, I'm always going to be recovering. Well, that's treatment center bullshit. When the obsession to drink and use drugs leaves you, that's as recovered as you're, you know, ever going to be. You're always going to be an addict. You'll always be an alcoholic, but you don't have to suffer in the same way that, you know, I used to, where I would white knuckle it through periods of sobriety. You know, today I'm free. Like, you know, it's funny. A guy that I used to work with, he said, hey, do you want to grab drinks? And then he was like, dude, I totally forgot you're sober. Like, that was so insensitive. I was like, no, that's like a normal thing to say to 85% of the world. You know, do you want to go to get drinks? You know, but I happen to be in that 15% that, you know, is addict alcoholic. And I think that people also like, you know, and I think this is true. You know, I think that we can be pretty fragile early in recovery. You know, but now, you know, a couple years down the road, like there's very few places that I can't go, or that I don't, you know, like I don't spend a lot of time hanging out in crack houses, just cause I have no business being there, but
No, but I agree. Like I early in my recovery, I would find myself like jealous if I was like, you know, in an environment where everyone's drinking, I'd be like, well, I can't do this. And there was such this like internal turmoil about it that I avoided the situation and the spaces. And then there was that shift or that something happened inside of me where I go, yeah, I'm okay. I don't desire it. I can be amongst it. And, it just became different to the point of like, it's just, you know, and it's going to be different time for everybody. There's no set timestamp. Like, hey, you got 2 years. Now you can go back to the bars and hang out. You know, some people never will be able to. And it's all based on the person, you know, it's based on the person, their personality type, where they're at in their recovery. That's the beauty of, I think, recovery is like, we're recovering through life. Like it's going to be different for each single one of us. And what's going to work for me may not work for you, but we got to be taking action to try something. Tell me about Yana. I want, you know, you threw out that you're doing this thing, but like, what is it? So people get to hear it. How do people engage into it? Give us a story of it.
Yeah. So Yana stemmed from a couple of things. Right at the beginning of the pandemic, the drug overdose death rate in Austin, Texas skyrocketed, hospitalization skyrocketed, suicide, you know, skyrocketed. And a lot of that had to do with that most of the people that had come to depend on 12-step meetings lost access to them.
Yeah.
The once semi-free treatment center Austin Recovery shut down after 50 years because they had to divert all that funding to, you know, combating COVID. And so when I started looking at a lot of the digital tools that were available, I found some of it problematic in the sense that, like they would be like, well, what are you addicted to? And it would be like white bread, cookies, cocaine, fentanyl. Those are very different things. I've met a lot of people that are like, well, hey, an addiction's an addiction. I said, yeah, but unless you're like severely diabetic, I don't know, you know, like the mortality rate for cookies, but I'm sure it's not as high as fentanyl. You know, and somebody who like cannot stop shooting dope, like they need to talk to someone who can say, yeah, me too. And so it was one, we wanted to have a really sort of singular focus. And then the second piece of it was, you know, thinking about my own experience early in recovery, I was very, very bored and I was very lonely. You know, in Austin, Texas, we're the live music capital of the world. There's a million different events predicated around drinking every single week, but there was very little in the way of recovery. You know, you had your home group and those, you know, sort of core friends that you meet and hang out with. You know, but what if you just want to go play golf and get a, you know, group of folks together to go do that? And so what I wanted to do, or at least what I set out to do, was I wanted to build a platform that was 100% focused on recovery, and connecting the dots. You know, I remember getting out of treatment, I simply didn't know what to do. And I went to a great treatment center. They said, okay, well, you know, go to meetings, get a sponsor. And I said, okay, well, what makes a good sponsor? What should I look for? And they said, well, that's sort of for you to decide. Or what's a good meeting? You know, who are the people that I should stay away from? Who are the predators? Yeah. And you sort of are expected to figure that stuff out as you go along, but it really depends. If you land in a room full of big book thumpers that are willing to sit down and show you how they did it, great. You're probably going to do fine, but you may land in a room where nobody's worked the steps. They don't know where any of that stuff is. And so we wanted to build a community that one was exclusive, to where we could make sure that the people that were coming in, and it was really based on this idea that if you have 100 people that are sober working a program of recovery, and then you have 10 that trickle in that are new to recovery, they're probably going to be lifted up by that community.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you drop them into a community that has, you know, say 500,000 members, which some of these other apps do, they're not going to know what to do first. They're not going to know who to reach out to. You know, one of the things that I love about what we do is that we tell people, hey, look, this community is just as much yours as it is mine. Yeah. You know, they can reach out to me. Like, I get messages all the time from members asking questions. We do a monthly town hall where they get to tell us, here's what we like, here's what we don't like, here's what we want to change. Because I want them to, like, and basically I say, if our community becomes a place that is unwelcoming, that's filled with judgment, that's filled with opinion, it will be because we made it that way, because we allowed that to take place. But if we're a place that's of hope and understanding, where our primary purpose is to help the person that still suffers, then, you know, I think that we have a lot of room to do some real good in this world. And so that's what we have tried to do. And so we've been able to, you know, connect the dots. Like, one of the things that we did early on, as I said, we need to be able to offer meetings that are, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that are literature based. So no matter what time you got off work or what time your kid went to bed, you know, there was a meeting for you. And so the only way we're able to do that was by partnering with people that lived in different countries. So
yeah,
we connected with people in recovery in London and Bali and, you know, in Australia, New Zealand, and said, hey, we want to do this. Would you be willing to chair it for this, you know, 2 hour block for the next 2 weeks? And
yeah,
people were more than happy to do it. And so now we do have meetings that are 24 hours a day.
I got on that and I was like, no, that can't be right. 24/7. Like, and I clicked on it and I was like, oh, I'm in a meeting, you know, and I was just amazed by it. Like, I was like, that's beautiful. Like, there's no more excuses now to be like, I can't find a meeting. It's there.
Yeah. And then so when we launched Yana, which was in April of 2020, our big goal was to have a sort of coming out party. We wanted to do the great big Austin Sober Boat Bash, where we were going to connect with Sans Bar and Clean Cause, which is a, you know, an energy drink that 50% of their profit goes to scholarshiping people into sober living homes.
Okay.
A great, great company. Sans Bar is a totally sober bar in downtown Austin. And then COVID shut the whole world down. But the idea was that you can't live your entire life online. You know, I don't think that that is healthy. I don't think that's what the founders intended. But what if you could meet a bunch of people online that you could connect your offline? And so, like, early in the day, first days, we have people that say, hey, I've got a tee time for four. I need three people. Who wants to play golf this weekend? Or, hey, we're getting a group of people in San Francisco. We're going to do this bike tour of the Bay Area. Who wants to join? And that's, you know, really what we wanted to do, because there's the meetings, there's working with others, but then there's the rest of life, and you've got to have something in there. And nobody gets sober to feel just as shitty as they did when they were out drinking and using.
No.
And I think that if you are having that experience, my coming out of my own experience, when I was feeling that way, when I was just as unhappy in sobriety as I was when I wasn't, is because there was some part of my program that was struggling. There was some part that was incomplete. And I really look at the, you know, three sides of the triangle of unity, service, and recovery. And usually it's one of those things, you know, am I too far away from the fellowship that, you know, I need to be a part of? Am I not giving enough service? And there's periods of time where my service dwindles quite a bit, because I've got three kids, one of whom is 6 months old. He's a handful.
Yep.
I've got a wife, I've got two animals, I've got mortgages and all sorts of stuff. So, and that's, you know, for me, what I hope we are able to provide through Yana is not only like sober events, but helping people connect the dots. You know, it's like, you know, go here, do this, read that. If it doesn't resonate, often what I tell, you know, during podcasts or when I'm doing an interview is, if you can't reconcile what I'm saying with what's in the first 164 pages of the big book, then I'm wrong. And it's just my opinion. I think more people will get healthy if we separated, you know, opinion from what the collective experience of millions of recovered people has, you know, shown us. And I think the same could be said about, you know, Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and SMART and Dharma and all sorts of, you know, different programs of recovery.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun. It hasn't, I'll tell you this, it hasn't been particularly well received by the industry. We were about 5 months old, and a pharmaceutical company based in Eastern Europe had sort of caught wind of what we were doing. And we were selected as a finalist for this thing called the LifeWell Barexo Innovation Challenge for Substance Use Disorder. And so the cool thing about this is, like, here's this tiny little platform, Yana. We pay for everything. We're not, you know, we don't have investors. We don't even sell anything. It's 100% free. And it will be forever. Yeah. And, but we were standing toe to toe with companies that had raised tens of millions of dollars in venture capital, that had been around 7, 8, 9 years. And they were saying that, you know, we were just as good as them. But when we got into it, I remember one of the judges said, so let me get that. This is sort of like AA 2.0. You know, you've just essentially tried to digitize the experience. And I said, no, actually, it's probably closer to AA 1.0. You know, AA today, as I mentioned, doesn't really talk, you know, doesn't really resemble what Dr. Bob and Bill, like, if you read, there's a great book by Clarence Schneider, or about Clarence Schneider, where he talks about the early days of AA. And so when you had 4 or 5 days sober, they were dragging you down to the Salvation Army to work with others. Yeah. You know, once you had been physically detoxed, they said, okay, your job is now to carry this message. And I think that's gotten so lost because through the advent of treatment, which I think is hugely valuable and saves tons of lives, by the time we get out 30, 60, 90 days later, we look like a whole different human being.
Yep.
You know, it's like almost rare to have someone come into an AA meeting that's drunk, or that is coming in off the street that isn't being transitioned out of a sober living home or a treatment center. And so I think that part of it is, you know, one of the main jobs that I see for myself, not even within YANA, but just in AA in general, is like, did I provide an adequate presentation of what this program is about?
Yeah.
You get to decide whether it's for you or not. You know, I get to tell you, hey, it worked for me. When I finally got off my ass, submitted to the program, did the work that it told me to do, you know, it was like 3.5, 4 weeks in where I was sitting down to dinner with my wife and kids. And it just sort of dawned on me where I was like, I haven't thought about drinking once today. And it had been years since I had felt that way, where that wasn't like just gnawing on the, you know, forefront of my mind.
Hmm. No, I love it. I mean, I agree with you on that. Like, too oftentimes in the rooms of AA, we have this like arbitrary number that we created. You got to be a year sober to do this, 2 years sober to do this, 3 years to do this. And I just can't agree with you more that, like, I love the rooms of AA, but I also love the fact that I believe that we need what you just said, like this ability to, if somebody's been 30 days sober and their life's completely radically feels different change, and they're like, man, we're like, let's not squash them. Let's go. How do we come alongside and support you in this and be like, awesome. How do we move in this? How do we let you create space to serve others and tell your story in this and bring light to it? Because, you know, Why wait? Like, why do we have to, it's almost like we have to like expect them to like, well, let's put you on pause in life for a while and just make sure that you can prove yourself in long term. And I'm like, it helps when you get to serve. It helps when you get to love. It helps when you get to like get out there and tell your story, because that's where change happens, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, people always want to put down the person. They're like, oh, well, they're on a pink cloud, or when they fall off that pink cloud, they're going to bust their ass. And it's like, you know, it's like, screw you. You know, yeah. Like, that's called God's grace, and it's equal and free to all of us. We all have an access to it. And some of the people that have been so incredible on YANA are people that have less than 6 months of sobriety, and they're absolutely on fire for the relief that they've found. And they're like, how do I get more? You know, how do I connect with more people? Yeah. When they have questions about sponsorship, you know, I say, hey, you know, your sponsor is the person you should go to, but here's what I've done with some of the people that I've worked with in the past. You know, and there's also been people that, as we talked about, you know, before this started, that have decades of sobriety where I'm like, I don't want what you have. You don't seem particularly happy with your, like, what you've got going on.
Well, I know me personally, right? So I'm only, I mean, I've been in and out recovery. I have my kind of view, like a chronic relapser. I loved your analogy of like you white knuckle it for 18 months. Like mine was, I could white knuckle for about like 6 months. And, but I've been 19 months sober. I had to really wrestle through this idea of like starting a podcast about sobriety because everything that got taught and told me was, no, you got to have like, you know, 5 years of recovery time in you to actually be able to be of service in this world. And so I constantly have to combat that internal lie to myself. That's like, it's okay. It's okay for me to get a share. It's okay for me to get to work with others. It's okay for me to realize that I have something to help show and teach others. And that's part of what helps keep me in a healthy space. And I love it. But it's funny, even in my own life, I've had to wrestle with that identity struggle of that, you know.
I think it's so hard for people to own their story, both like internally within the, you know, sort of confines of AA, but also publicly. You know, it wasn't until I founded Yana that professionally I started telling people, hey, I'm in long-term recovery, because there's a ton of stigma out there. And people just assume that like, hey, you know, he's a drug addict. I'm be like, no, actually I'm a recovered drug addict. And there's a huge difference there, you know? But I agree, you know, there's like, I've never understood like why the, you know, the scale had been tipped so far in the favor of quantity over quality. You know, like I work a great program and I don't have decades of sobriety. Okay. I help others that, you know, in turn go and help other people. Yeah. And there's nowhere in the big book where it says you need to have X amount of sobriety to do anything. I think that if you have a message of hope, you actually have a moral obligation to share that with others.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, hey, you know, I haven't been at this that long, but my life's better than it's ever been. You know, this is the happiest I've ever been in my life. That's a direct result of the work that I've done around the rooms of AA and, you know, with working with others. And it's, you know, but the funny part is there's just going to be some people that are like, nope, I know a ton of clubs just here in Austin where you have to have a year or more to do, you know, whether it's like chair a meeting or, you know, be one of their Friday night speakers. I'm like, why? Yeah. You know, like if you have a story that you want to share, that you want to tell, like I'm convinced that the most powerful words that any person in early recovery can hear is, yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that understands where there it's totally devoid of judgment.
Yeah.
It's filled with hope and it's filled with love and understanding makes such a fundamental difference because the moment in which a person is willing is very small and it's very fleeting. And so you need to try. And so do you want to try and scare them into the rooms of the recovery? I can't even remember my own war stories. You think I'm going to remember yours? Absolutely not. You know, but you know, the things that the people were telling me when I was early in recovery, they talked about getting their families back and mending those relationships, you know, finding a career that was meaningful, rebuilding relationships, you know, with their children and all of these things that, you know, I wanted so badly, but seemed so far out of reach. They showed me how to do those things and how they did those things. And to me, it didn't matter if they had 10 minutes sober or 10 years, they had something that I wanted. And I said, how did you get that?
I think
that's just so important.
And I love that. I mean, like Yana, I don't even think we said it yet, but like Yana, like you are not alone. Like, and that to me is such a value of like what the name of it, because I'm like, that's it, right? Like we have to be able to present something that people go, I want that. And I realize I'm not alone, because in our addictions, the tendency to do is to believe we're the only ones that deal with it. So we move towards a place of isolation versus stepping into community and go, you know, hey, here's where I am. And so, you know, Yana creates that space where you go, you can show up and go, wow, I'm not alone. Wow, let me get involved, you know, digitally, but let me find how I can connect off the computer and connect with people. I love it, man. But hey, I want to running out of time, but I want to ask you one last question. And it's kind of for you to sum it all up, but if you had, say the whole world just stopped real quick and they're all listening to this podcast, this moment, this time, and you got one chance to speak one truth to the whole entire world, what would you say?
Don't give up. Don't give up. The world can be a pretty dark place, and, you know, and especially I think today it's like filled with a lot of negativity. Yeah. You know, but I believe that nothing in this world is trivial. Everything has meaning to it, especially you and what you have to offer someone else. And I know that for me, there was years and years and years where I didn't feel worthy of this life, and I didn't feel worthy of the love of my children and, you know, the family that stood by me day in and day out when I couldn't even, you know, care enough about myself. And, you know, and the best thing that, you know, I can say that I did even when I was drinking and using drugs was I kept trying. I kept going back. You know, they say it's try, you know, keep coming back. It works if you work it. And thank God I did keep coming back, because, you know, there's a lot of people that didn't have that opportunity to you know, carry forward. And so for me, like, no matter how dark it feels or no matter how hopeless you are, You know, there's a place out there for you, and you have no idea the impact that you're going to have on the people that end up in your life. You know, it could be hard to see at times, but, you know, I'm really, really grateful in my own life for the amazing people that I've been able to meet with and work in, you know, in recovery. I mean, look at us just connecting like this, you know, Hawaii to Texas.
That's right, man. Mm-hmm. So, well, Tyler, I do. I want to say, man, I love what you guys are doing with Yana. Link to Yana is in the show notes for anybody that wants to connect to it. And I'd say everybody should. But I do. I appreciate you taking the time. I hope you get your house all figured out, put back together. And hey, I want to leave you guys with this. Yana, you are not alone. So often that is our struggle, right? So often in our struggle, we believe this lie that we're the only ones, that we're the only ones struggling through it. We're the only ones dealing with it. We're the only ones here. So we don't reach out for help. And I'm here to tell you, you are not alone. Connect with somebody. If it's through Yana on your computer, your phone, if that's it, or if it's someone close to you in your life, if it's a family member, a friend, if you need somebody, reach out to me, call me, message me, go to bravingthejourney.com and email me. There's so many different ways to connect and reach out. So I just want you to know, just do it. Do it today. Don't wait. Don't wait another day. Don't say, I'll do it tomorrow. Today's all you got. So do it.